Good evening, church. It's good to see all of you here. Good to get a chance to get back up here and speak. It's been a couple months. I've been busy and dealing with a new addition to the family, but it's good to be up here to be able to share the Word of God with you again, and hopefully both you and I will gain something from the things that we say this evening. If there are any visitors among us, we're very happy to see you, and we hope that you'll stick around and let us get a chance to know you for a few minutes. We've been talking a lot about walls this year, haven't we? We've been talking about walls week to week. We have a wall out there that we're building up. And it brings to mind, about a year ago, I was playing a game online with a friend. And it was one of these medieval-style kind of free-form games. They set up this battlefield, and me and a few friends are on one side, and you got these enemies on the other, and we're rolling dice and doing attacks, fighting with swords, shields, bow, arrow, that sort of thing. And the guy who was running this game had decided he wanted to run a siege. He wanted to run an army attacking a wall and us fighting from the top of the wall. And that friend who set this up seriously underestimated how strong medieval walls were. We didn't get hurt. They couldn't hit us. We were ducking behind parapets? We were ducking behind the obstructions at the top of the wall. We had free sight to aim, shoot arrows, or throw down siege things at everybody. They brought ladders. Ladders didn't work. We just shoved them off the wall. They brought siege equipment. They couldn't aim it very well. This is medieval stuff. It wasn't very easy to aim. We sent them packing in like 5 minutes. Walls back in this time were huge. You couldn't just bring dynamite and blow them up or send an airplane overhead to drop some bombs onto the walls. You couldn't do any of that. Walls were the ultimate defense, the ultimate separating line, a strong division between what is inside and what is outside of the city. We're going to look at this distinction this morning of being inside or outside of the city, because in the law of Moses, we're going to be studying a lot in Exodus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Leviticus, looking at these passages, the distinction between what is inside the city and what is outside the city is brought up a lot more than you would think. And it foreshadows some important messages that I want to study today. We're going to look at three different things that were separated between the inside and outside of the city, and then make some application of those things to our current situation and our current life. First of all, uncleanness and impurity was to be kept outside of those dividing walls. If you turn to Numbers chapter 5 and verse 2, Numbers chapter 5 and verse 2. This is stated very plainly and very forcefully by God. I'll actually start in verse 1. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Command the children of Israel that they put out of the camp every leper, everyone who has a discharge, and whoever becomes defiled by a corpse. You shall put out both male and female. You shall put them outside the camp, that they may not defile their camps in the midst of which I dwell." And the children of Israel did so. Now note, I'm talking about outside the city walls. These passages are going to reference the camp a lot because they hadn't moved into the cities yet. But it's the same effect. It's the same dividing wall, the same division between the inside and the outside. And God commanded that these diseases stay outside the camp. Now, at this time, they may not have known why they did that. We understand, right? Science has progressed enough. We understand germ theory. We understand the transmissibility of diseases, the way that these things happen. The same reason that God had the priests wash their hands and do certain things. This was to keep the disease from spreading throughout the city, throughout the camp, and decimating the people. And God made sure they understood the division. These people cannot come into the camp until they are cleansed. And the children of Israel did so. Plague was also to be kept outside the camp. If you turn to Leviticus chapter 14, Leviticus chapter 14 goes pretty far to describe this. We're going to begin in verse 37. This priest is going in to examine a house that has had plague in it. And it says in verse 37, "He shall examine the plague, and indeed if the plague is on the walls of the house with ingrained streaks, greenish or reddish, which appear to be deep in the wall, then the priest shall go out of the house to the door of the house and shut up the house 7 days. And the priest shall come again on the seventh day and look, and if indeed the plague has spread on the walls of the house, then the priest shall command that they take away the stones in which is the plague, and they shall cast them into an unclean place outside the city. And he shall cause the house to be scraped inside all around, and the dust that they scraped off they shall pour in an unclean place outside the city. Then they shall take other stones and put them in the place of those stones, and he shall take other mortar and plaster the house. Now if the plague comes back and breaks out in the house after he has taken away the stones, after he has scraped the house, and after it is plastered, then the priest shall come and look, and indeed if the plague is spread in the house, if it is an active leprosy in the house, it is unclean. And he shall break down the house, its stones, its timber, and all the plaster of the house, and shall carry them outside of the city to an unclean place. Moreover, he who goes into the house at all while it is shut up shall be unclean until evening. God isn't playing around with this. If there is impurity inside the city, if there's this uncleanness inside this house, take the parts that are impure out. Scrape the walls. Take the dust out. If that doesn't get rid of it, break down the house. Take the entire house outside the city. If someone's lived in that house, take them outside the city. They're unclean. Everything must go. There cannot remain a scrap of impurity, this uncleanness, this disease inside the city. For, I imagine, the same reasons, the health reasons, but also the reasons that were stated in Numbers chapter 5, that there may not be uncleanness within where the Lord dwells. They're very thorough about moving these things outside. And lastly, when it comes to uncleanness, impurity, the dirt had to be kept outside of the city. In Deuteronomy chapter 23, we'll look at that in a moment. Deuteronomy 23, beginning in verse 10. Now, this might seem like common sense to you and me back at this time, since they didn't have plumbing or anything like that. It says, if there is any man among you, this is verse 10 of Deuteronomy 23, who becomes unclean by some occurrence in the night, then he shall go outside the camp. He shall not come inside the camp. But it shall be, when evening comes, that he shall wash with water, and when the sun sets, he may come into the camp. Also you shall have a place outside the camp where you may go out, and you shall have an implement among your equipment, and when you sit down outside, you shall dig with it and turn and cover your refuse. For the Lord your God walks in the midst of your camp to deliver you and give your enemies over to you. Therefore your camp shall be holy, that he may see no unclean thing among you and turn away from you. We've studied this a little bit in the past, right? We all know about the unclean things and how strict they were about leprosy, how strict they were about unclean animals, touching dead bodies, all that sort of stuff. But it was only recently when studying this that I came across this idea of outside the camp, outside the city. I'm only referencing a few verses here. There are a lot more about keeping this uncleanness, this impurity outside of the city. Whether it be our refuse, whether it be plague and disease, leprosy, uncleanness, discharges, any of these things that contaminate the city were to be kept outside of it. We'll continue on, but keep that in mind. We will make application at the end of the lesson for the uncleanness and impurity. Punishment and death took place outside the city. We are going to turn to all three of these passages. Leviticus chapter 24. Leviticus chapter 24 and verse 14. These are very quick and simple commands. It says, take him outside the camp. This is a passage about blasphemy. Take outside the camp him who has cursed, who has blasphemed. Then let all who heard him lay their hands on his head and let all the congregation stone him. This is a command that we've come to before when talking about how bad blasphemy is, but it's important that they take him outside the camp to do this deed, to stone him. In Deuteronomy, a very similar passage, in Deuteronomy 17, beginning in verse 2, if there is found among you within any of your gates, which the Lord your God gives you, a man or a woman who has been wicked in the sight of the Lord your God in transgressing his covenant, who has gone and served other gods and worshipped them, either the sun or moon or any of the host of heaven, which I have not commanded, and it is told you, and you hear of it, you shall inquire diligently. And if it is indeed true and certain that such an abomination has been committed in Israel, then you shall bring out to your gates that man or woman who has committed that wicked thing, and shall stone to death that man or woman with stones. Idolatry, just like blasphemy, was not to be tolerated. But before you mete out judgment, before you take that person's life, you are to take them outside the city. That's where the suffering and the death was to take place. That's where the justice took place. One more about stoning, although there are a lot more that I could go to. Deuteronomy chapter 22. Deuteronomy 22 in verse 23 and continuing. If a young woman who is a virgin is betrothed to a husband, and a man finds her in the city and lies with her, then you shall bring both of them out of that gate of that city, to the gate of that city, and you shall stone them to death with stones, the young woman because she did not cry out in the city, and the man because he humbled his neighbor's wife. So you shall put away the evil from among you. In the case of blasphemy, in the case of idolatry, in the case of fornication, bring them outside the city, and there mete out the punishment. There are a lot more examples of this that I could go to. If you recall Achan was taken away from the camp before he was judged. If you look at several other sins that we have in Exodus, Leviticus, Deuteronomy, Numbers, they say bring them outside the camp and there judge them. If you go to the New Testament, Jesus, when he preached in Nazareth in Luke chapter 4, they tried to stone him, but first they brought him out of the city. Before they attempted to stone him, Stephen was stoned out at the city gate. They drug him out and they killed him there. Paul was stoned and then carried outside the city, but you know, nobody's perfect, right? There are a lot of examples of this. It's prevalent throughout the Bible, not just the stoning, but first the carrying them outside of the city. It's also considered shameful and punishing to be taken out of the city after your death. In Jeremiah chapter 22, a prophecy about one of the kings. Jeremiah 22. Jeremiah 22, beginning in verse 18. Jeremiah is prophesying about the evil king Jehoiakim. And he says, "Therefore, thus says the Lord concerning Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, they shall not lament for him, saying, 'Alas, my brother,' or 'Alas, my sister.' They shall not lament for him, saying, 'Alas, master,' or 'Alas, his glory.' He shall be buried with the burial of a donkey, dragged and cast out beyond the gates of Jerusalem." He can't even be buried in the city. He's that bad. We have to cast him out. It's this shame. No one's going to mourn him. Nobody wants to give him a proper burial with the kings. He's just going to be tossed out of the city gates. It's this idea of this punishment, this death, this shame of being taken outside the city. And judgment often waits outside the city for those who are secure from it. If you look at 1 Kings chapter 2, 1 Kings chapter 2, this is not a story that we go back to very often, but in 1 Kings chapter 2, Solomon has just become king, and David sort of gives him a laundry list of, hey, these are the problems that I still have yet to deal with. This man did this, this man did this, this man was seeking to become king at one point. These are your problems you have to deal with, Solomon. And Solomon takes to dealing with those problems. And beginning in verse 36 of 1 Kings chapter 2, the king sent and called for Shimei. This is a man who had cursed David when he was being driven out of the city, thrown rocks at him, blasphemed against him, and David had let him live for that time. But the king Solomon sent and called for him and said, "Build yourself a house in Jerusalem and dwell there, and do not go out from there anywhere. For it shall be on the day you go out and cross the brook Kidron, know for certain you shall surely die. Your blood shall be on your own head." And Shimei said to the king, "This saying is good." This wasn't a novel concept when Solomon presented it to Shimei. In Numbers chapter 35, there were commands regarding cities of refuge. If you were an accidental murderer, if you accidentally struck someone, there was a law saying an avenger of blood of that family could come after you and take your life. But if you flee to one of these Levite cities of refuge, you could stay there in the safety of the walls of that city, and the avenger of blood could not kill you inside the city. But if you leave the city, your blood is on your own hands, or more so on the Avenger of Blood's hands. This idea of the city being a safe refuge, even if you deserve the judgment that's waiting for you outside the city, in the case of Shimei, even if someone has the right to take your life because of what you did to their family, you can plead on the mercy that is inside the city, and perhaps things will go well for you. Now, Shimei left the city, and he was executed. But this idea of safety being inside the city, of mercy being inside the city, and judgment, punishment, and death outside the city is prevalent through the stoning, is prevalent through the prophecies, it's prevalent through the way that they judged certain sins in the Old Testament. Punishment and death were to take place outside the city. Finally, sacrifices often had an element that had to do with some location outside of the city gates. If we turn to Exodus chapter 29, Exodus 29, we'll begin in verse 10. During the consecration of the priests, which is what's happening at this time, they were to have a sin offering for themselves to cleanse these priests of their sin. And if you look in verse 10 of that chapter 29, regarding the consecration, you shall have the bull brought before the tabernacle of meeting, and Aaron and his sons shall put their hands on the head of the bull. Then you shall kill the bull before the Lord by the door of the tabernacle of meeting. You shall take some of the blood of the bull and put it on the horns of the altar with your finger and pour all the blood beside the base of the altar. And you shall take all the fat that covers the entrails, the fatty lobe attached to the liver, and the two kidneys and the fat that is on them, and burn them on the altar. But the flesh of the bull, with its skin and its offal, you shall burn with fire outside the camp. It is a sin offering. That confused me a lot when I was reading through these offerings. I did a sermon a while back on the offerings. When I was reading through them, it's like, well, you take part of it outside the camp, you burn it there, but you burn part of it inside the camp, and you sprinkle the blood over here. It was a very complicated thing, but it was interesting to me reading through it with this idea that they took the body outside the camp. It was a dead body, right? It's unclean. They took the body outside the camp, but the blood that sanctified the people, the blood that sanctified the priests, that stayed inside the camp with the priests. They sprinkled it. They used it for these ceremonies. There is a similar circumstance in Leviticus 6 in verse 11. This is the general burnt offering for the people. And they're going through the details of how to go through the procedure of that offering. And in Leviticus chapter 6, they go through the offering and the burning of it. And it says in verse 11, he, that is the priest, shall take off his garments, put on other garments, and carry the ashes of the offering outside the camp to a clean place. This wasn't just for the priests. This was something they generally did with the burnt offering for the people. They carried the ashes, which would have been the body after being cremated, outside of the camp to dispose of. There was another specific offering that had something to do with outside of the camp or outside the city, and that's the scapegoat offering. We're all familiar with the term scapegoat, right? It's a pretty common term that we use today. It's the one that takes the beating. It's the one that takes the blame, right? In Leviticus chapter 16, the scapegoat offering is detailed. Leviticus 16, beginning in verse 6, Aaron shall offer the bull as a sin offering, which is for himself, and make atonement for himself and for his house. He shall take the two goats that they have detailed before and present them before the Lord at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. Then Aaron shall cast lots for the two goats, one lot for the Lord and the other lot for the scapegoat. And Aaron shall bring the goat on which the Lord's lot fell and offer it as a sin offering. But the goat on which the lot fell to be the scapegoat shall be presented alive before the Lord to make atonement upon it and to let it go as the scapegoat into the wilderness. So you got two goats. One is sacrificed, is killed. The other is released and let go. The scapegoat bears the sin and carries it away from the camp, is I think the idea. There was this Jewish tradition that took place afterward that you read about in history, where they would tie a red cord to the goat. They would cut that red cord in half, and they'd send the goat down to the wilderness, and the red cord would turn white, according to their traditions. I don't know whether that actually happened or not. Symbolizing the red, the scarlet of the sin, of the blood, washing away and being white as snow. We sing songs that include that imagery because that imagery is in the New Testament regarding Christ. But it's interesting that that became a Jewish tradition over time. But in this tradition of the scapegoat, the goat was to be released outside of the camp and carry that sin outside of the camp as a sacrifice. In Numbers chapter 19, there's one other sacrifice that I don't believe I ever even had heard of before I started studying this particular subject. In Numbers chapter 19, the red heifer of cleansing. Chapter 19, we're not going to read the whole thing. There's a lot in there. Numbers 19, beginning in verse 2. This is the ordinance of the law which the Lord has commanded, saying, speak to the children of Israel that they bring you a red heifer without blemish, in which there is no defect and on which a yoke has never come. You shall give it to Eleazar the priest, and he shall take it outside the camp, and it shall be slaughtered before him. And the priest shall take some of its blood with a finger and sprinkle its blood 7 times directly in front of the tabernacle of meeting. Well, this is a different sacrifice than what we've talked about before. What are we supposed to do with this particular sacrifice? What's the point? Well, if you go down to verse 9, it says, regarding this heifer that has been taken outside the city and burned, then a man who is clean shall gather up the ashes of the heifer and store them outside the camp in a clean place, and they shall be kept for the congregation of the children of Israel for the water of purification. It is for purifying from sin. So what they would do is they would take these ashes of this red heifer that was burned outside the camp and store them in a particular place. And then if someone was uncleaned, part of the way that they needed to re-enter the camp was they had to take these ashes and put them in some water and sprinkle themselves with that water. So this sacrifice was killed outside the camp, and then the body of that sacrifice was used to make cleansing water that you had to use to re-enter the camp. I found that fascinating. But that all had to happen outside the camp for those who were trying to re-enter the camp. So all these things take place outside the camp. The impurity, the uncleanness, which in a way represents sin. God says he doesn't want any uncleanness and impurity and unholiness among him. The punishment and death for the sin takes place outside the camp, and the sacrifices were to take place often outside the camp, or parts of them were to be brought outside the camp. There's a very strong correlation with all this. And around this time in my study, I was like, Kyle, where are you going with all of this? What's the point? Well, the point is directly pointed out by the writer of Hebrews. If you turn to Hebrews chapter 13, we're going to start bringing this all together and looking at what this means to us. Hebrews chapter 13, beginning in verse 11, near the end of Hebrews here. It says, for the bodies of those animals, talking about the old sacrifices, whose blood is brought into the sanctuary by the high priest for sin, are burned outside the camp. Therefore, Jesus also, that he might sanctify the people with his own blood, suffered outside the gate. Therefore, let us go forth to him outside the camp, bearing his reproach. For here we have no continuing city, but we seek the one to come. Talking about this city that we're going to enter. We are to go outside the camp and suffer reproach with Christ just as he did. He was sacrificed outside the city. He was brought out of the gate of Jerusalem after spilling blood inside Jerusalem, and there he was killed and suffered and died outside the city gates. And people saw that. And he was buried. And then he gave us the gift of baptism, this ceremonial water that we can cleanse ourselves with if we're going to enter that city which is to come. This was all very intentional. God put this together, put this outside the gate stuff, not just to keep the city clean, but to foreshadow Christ, so that we can understand what he's suffering for us, what his suffering meant. And we have to go outside the camp to meet him there. He's our scapegoat, right? He's our red heifer. He is the burnt offering. He is all of the offerings in one. And we go out there to meet him by cleansing ourselves in the water of his body, which is outside the camp. There's another couple of references to this outside the camp in the New Testament that we also need to understand. Punishment and death takes place outside the camp. In Matthew chapter 5, but also in Mark 9, which is where I'm going to turn, because it's a little more direct in the reading, Mark chapter 9, beginning in verse 45, Jesus says, "If your foot causes you to sin, cut it off. It is better for you to enter life lame rather than having 2 feet to be cast into hell, into the fire which shall never be quenched, where their worm does not die and the fire is not quenched. And if your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out. It is better for you to enter the kingdom of God with one eye rather than having 2 eyes to be cast into hellfire, where the worm does not die and the fire is not quenched." Now you might be asking, Kyle, what does that have to do with outside the city? It has everything to do with outside the city. This word hell is translated as hell, but Jesus was referring to this hell, this concept of hell, using the word Gehenna, meaning the valley of Hinnom, which was a valley just outside the camp. It's this idea of we're in the city, we're safe, but if we sin and we don't cast that sin away from us, if we don't do everything we can to get that sin and impurity away from us, we'll be thrown out of the city into the fiery valley that waits for us outside the city. This exact comparison is here. If the translation translated the location, he would have said Gehenna rather than hell. It is this valley that he's talking about, this death that awaits outside the city. According to history, this valley was a trash pit. They burned their refuse in it. They burned their unclean things in it. And Jesus says, if you keep this uncleanness with you, you will be burned with the rest of it. You will be burned along with all of the uncleanness. And those that are sinners, it's sort of the same thing, but those that are sinners will also be kept outside the camp. If you turn to Matthew chapter 25, there are a couple of parables here. There are a lot more that Jesus uses this imagery in, but there are a couple of parables here that I want to look at. Matthew chapter 25 begins with the parable of the wise and foolish virgins, these people who were supposed to keep their lamps bright and keep them wicked and await the bridegroom at a wedding. It was a part of their wedding traditions. And some of them ran out of lamp oil. They were unprepared for when the bridegroom came. And when the bridegroom came, it says in verse 10, "While they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the wedding, and the door was shut. Afterward, the other virgins came also, saying, 'Lord, Lord, open to us.' But he answered and said, 'Assuredly, I say to you, I do not know you.'" Jesus comparing this city that is to come, this heaven, this kingdom of heaven, to a wedding, and those who are not prepared will be stuck outside the door, outside the kingdom. There's a little bit more direct about that comparison in verse 30. This is the end of the parable of the talents. Each servant was given certain numbers of talents. The Lord told them, go out and, you know, work and see what you can gain. One of them didn't work at all. He buried his talent in the ground, and he had that talent taken away from him and given to someone else. And in verse 30, at the end of the parable, Jesus says that the punishment, he says, cast the unprofitable servant into the outer darkness, outside the city, outside of the realm. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. This outer darkness is used in several parables of Jesus Christ. The comparison is clear. You don't want to be outside the city where the sin and the death and the fire and the darkness and the refuse is. Jesus went out and suffered that for us outside the camp. We can come into the camp. We can come into the city. We can pass that dividing wall. That's what Jesus did for us. This all emphasizes a very stark contrast between being inside and outside the city. And that's important to us because, like I said at the beginning, medieval walls were just impassable at the time. This strong dividing wall between being inside and outside the city, you're not going to scale that wall. You're not going to put a ladder up against it and sneak in some other way. There is one way into that city, and that's through the gate. And you have to be clean to go through that gate. You have to be. And there's only one way for us to cleanse ourselves. Only one way that we can cleanse ourselves and avoid the suffering that waits for us outside the gate. Jesus took that on for us. And if we're going to enter the city, we have to take his sacrifice, suffer outside the gate with him, and enter the city. What city is this? I'm not going to go through necessarily all of these passages. Back in the Old Testament, they were talking about any city that the Jews were dwelling in, but a lot of the time it was about Jerusalem. It's the city that God has chosen, he calls it, in 2 Chronicles 6. It's this city where the priest of the Most High God was as early as Genesis. He's referenced in Hebrews chapter 7. But there's a different city that we are looking to. In Zechariah chapter 2, it's going to take me a moment to find that. Zechariah is not the easiest to come across. Zechariah chapter 2, beginning in verse 4, there was an angel who says to him, "Run, speak to this young man, saying, Jerusalem shall be inhabited as towns without walls, because of the multitude of men and livestock in it. For I, says the Lord, will be a wall of fire around her, and I will be the glory in her midst." This is a prophecy about how Jerusalem, God's chosen city, will one day be inhabited as towns without walls. It'll be spread out. There's so many people, they wouldn't fit into a single city. They'll be spread out in all of the towns all around. What's the dividing wall? God is the dividing wall. He will be a fire around them. He will protect them, and he will divide them. The clean from the unclean, the sinner from the freed, the deaf from the life. This is a prophecy of the church. We are that new Jerusalem. We are that town without walls. And of course, in Revelation chapter 21, there is a new Jerusalem that we look forward to. A new heaven, a new earth, a new Jerusalem, a paradise where we can be with God. And there will be a wall around it, and only some people are going to enter that wall. The contrast is very clear. Are you inside or outside the city? Are you inside or outside God's kingdom, the kingdom of heaven, the church? It's an important question. There is a gate. It's got some ashes by it that you can put in water and that you can cleanse yourself with. There is a sacrifice that has taken place for you already. Are you leprous outside the camp, poisoned by the sin in your life? Or are you someone who has taken your place outside the gate with Jesus, has taken his reproach on yourself, cleansed yourself in this water, accepted him as your scapegoat, and come into the city, cleansed and ready to dwell with God in a holy place? The high priest will admit you back in. Our high priest and sacrifice, Jesus Christ, will do so. And we can avoid that death and punishment that we deserve that waits for us outside the city gates. I hope putting these things in this context has helped solidify it in your mind. There's only one way in. But inside that city is safety and security, and all of the death and destruction and punishment and disease and uncleanness is outside, and the sacrifices have already taken place there. We can be a pure and holy nation with God. If you would like to enter this city and you haven't made that choice to take that sacrifice on yourself, now is a good time. If you've been in that city and you've touched something unclean and you've been sent right back out and you haven't come back, now is also a good time to do that. We can help you. Come while we stand and sing.